Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. We got an interesting show lined up for you today. Joining us, Gary Bates. We're going to talk about a new documentary called Alien Intrusion, Unmasking a Deception. It's going to screen on more than 700 movie theaters nationwide for just one night only on January 11th, 2018. Gary is here to talk to us about his work and research into ufology and about the documentary. Gary, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, Dave. Great to be with you.
That's a fantastic accent. What part of New England are you from?
Exactly. Well, I actually live here in the U.S. I work for Creation Ministries International. I'm the CEO. We're based in Atlanta. So I usually tell people that's my deep southern accent, but
yes.
I'm actually from Australia originally. I've been in the States for almost 10 years now.
Where did your interest and fascination in the world of UFOs and aliens begin?
Well, if I could tell you a little bit about what I do now, as I said, I'm the CEO of Creation Ministries International. We are actually a Christian apologetics ministry. We've actually got offices in seven countries around the world. So I think to the best of my knowledge, Dave, we probably employ more PhDs, more scientists than any Christian ministry in the world. And as you would be well aware, not many Christians delve into this subject. Or if they do, to be honest, they often come up with very weird, wacky, conspiratorial type theories and those sorts of ideas. But working for a scientific organization, when I joined them, I've been with them about 25 years, you know, I didn't become a Christian until I was an adult, in my adult years. And I grew up a pretty staunch evolutionist. And as I started working for the ministry, I realized that, you know, the whole concept of, you know, aliens visiting us, which, you know, 80% of Americans believe, if you look at the polls, is predicated on the idea that, you know, there was a Big Bang 14 billion years ago, and, you know, our Milky Way galaxy and is a relatively young part of the universe, and, you know, the great cosmic science experiment, evolution, well, it worked here, it must have worked countless times over, and if we're in a young part of the universe, it could be alien races that have evolved a million or billion years in advance of human beings, and that's how come they can visit the Earth, stealthily abduct people in the middle of the night, or maybe they seeded life here millions of years ago. And these are the types of themes you have. And in fact, that's a mainstream idea because it's the idea that obviously gets portrayed in most science fiction. You know, even if you watch something as seemingly benign as Star Wars, of course, they've got the new edition coming out in December. But the very concept, when you look at those aliens with weird body shapes and everything else, you know, someone like Jabba the Hutt, yeah, it looks like he ate too many pizzas, but the reason he looks the way he does is because evolution took a different turn on their planet. So that kind of link, when it comes to the issue of origins, had a direct link to the ministry that I work for. And as I say, I grew up a sci-fi fan. So I started researching, reading all the UFO literature. And I've got to be honest, I have a confession, you know, like probably most people, when you hear the stories of abductees in particular, you think that, you know, they must be psychologically deranged or, you know, they're just seeking their 5 minutes of fame. But whether you're a Christian or secular, and, you know, this is what the movie shows, we've got people like John Mack and Bud Hopkins who, you know, were the big guns of abduction research some years ago. You know, they turn around and say, anybody who has seriously researched this knows that something actually is happening to these people. And, you know, I concur with that. I might come at a different view about the origin of these beings. But certainly we have to take the cases and the experiences that people have seriously. And we should not write them off. And our view, what we, you know, do with the movie, and which is actually based upon my book, Alien Intrusion, which came out in 2005, is my view is we need to help these people. They're looking for answers. And to be honest, even though I've been involved in this now in a long time, I think when you watch all the UFO documentaries and the shows, you know, they never kind of give you an answer. They kind of leave it up in the air. They say it could be this, it could be that. And so that was part of my goal, was to see whether I think we could find out anything definitive about it.
Well, you said that you have kind of a different take on what these people are experiencing, that believe that they've been abducted by aliens. Can we start there for you on this? What do you believe that is?
Well, there's two major components to ufology. One is the sightings that people have. And the statistics show that, you know, anywhere between 80 to 90% of sightings can always be explained. You know, people mistake lenticular clouds or ball lightning or, you know, maybe a satellite flying overhead. And the reason they're mainly mistaken is also twofold. One is that it's mainly lay people looking at these things. So they don't know, obviously, what they're looking at. They're not experts. But the second is what I would call a cultural conditioning. So through, you know, our education, through science fiction, the media, you know, this idea of, you know, advanced aliens traveling around the universe in faster than light craft is popular culture. You know, that's known as, in ufology, the extraterrestrial hypothesis. You know, when we started to have the first rash of modern sightings, you know, in the 1940s, and of course there was Roswell, and, you know, a UFO sighting kind of doesn't even make the news now because they're so common. But we had all these spectacular claims. And as I said, about, you know, anywhere up to 90% can be explained. But there's a small percentage that cannot be explained. You know, in the movie, for example, we discuss the Washington UFOs. And we also show a disclosure conference held at the Washington Press Club in 2010, where over 80 military or Air Force officers, so these are just not enlisted guys, these are guys that have had long and storied careers in the Air Force, who you would think have a lot more to lose than to gain by telling wild, fanciful stories, give descriptions of objects flying at over 7,000 miles per hour. Now, we don't have craft that can do that, you know, doing U-turns and without slowing down. And in one case, they said, you know, they basically entered our nuclear missile silos and interfered with the, you know, operational readiness of our nuclear weapons. So this is quite staggering when you hear these types of things. And the second area, of course, is in abductions. And you know, you and I can't lasso the strange light in the sky and pull it in and do empirical tests on it. As I said, most can be explained through natural or man-made phenomenon, but there's a small percentage that defy naturalistic explanation. And again, because we can't do tests on them, we're always left wondering, you know, what is it? But it's in the area of abductions where people believe that they are having encounters with, you know, alien beings. I think where we can, you know, get to the bottom of it more or less and try to unpick what's going on. Now, on that, when I said it's a cultural phenomenon, let me point out famous ufologists like Dr. Jacques Vallée, who, you know, you know, Steven Spielberg based his character in Close Encounters of the Third Kind on, you know, the French investigator. It was actually based upon Dr. Vallée. He's written, you know, as many books as just about anybody on this subject, and he said it's the same phenomenon that's been mankind for centuries. In the past, it presented itself as fairies or the little people. And when you look at what's called the classic abduction syndrome, which is a set of markers researchers use to try to find the experiences somebody's had, they're almost identical to the experiences that people have today, you know, with alleged highly evolved benevolent aliens coming from a galaxy far, far away.
I'm fascinated always by the different takes and different belief systems in what we're truly dealing with. And are we dealing with things that are from our galaxy, our universe, or are we dealing with things from interdimensional portals? And, you know, there's, like you said, the problem is because we can't grab it, test it, and look at it, we have no way of determining where exactly it comes from or what exactly it is that we're dealing with. But there have been so many sightings and so many whistleblowers that have come forward through the years that claim to have been part of the military and part of the know that share these stories and backgrounds that they say these are alien craft. Has there been a definitive answer to where these aliens have come from any of this, any of these military backgrounds? Do they ever actually claim this is from, you know, interstellar travel or interdimensional travel? Do we have any insight on that?
Yeah. Well, it's very perceptive of you to kind of note that, I have to say, because, you know, the extraterrestrial hypothesis, which is what I mentioned earlier, really for 60 years has been the most popular view, that these have to be, you know, highly evolved, technologically advanced beings visiting, you know, our solar system. There's a couple of things to note. We've now got, you know, almost 80 years of data. And clearly, and again, I just want to point out, it's not little Joe Christian saying this, because again, if anybody seriously researches this, this is what the secular researchers are saying, that we never see them entering our atmosphere from outside. When they appear, they just appear. You know, I mentioned the Washington UFOs, good example. We interview a radar operator in our movie who was actually there, and they were seen on three separate radar installations, moving at speeds, he says, that we didn't have craft in those days that could do that. They merged into one object. They broke up into little objects and did it again. The U.S. Air Force was dispatched, and the objects just vanished into thin air. And then the Air Force landed, out came, they came back out again and just played cat and mouse with the military. So the focus after all these years has now shifted. They are saying we are not dealing with something that is traveling here from a galaxy far, far away. We now know enough about the universe and the very laws of physics that govern our universe. No amount of advanced technology can do that. And let me just digress on that if I can. You know, I get challenged all the time and people come up and say, well, you can't say that it's impossible. You know, 100 years ago, we thought manned flights to the moon would have been impossible. Well, manned flights to the moon don't defy the laws of physics. When you're talking about acceleration and G-forces and interstellar dust, I mean, if you hit a grain of dust at even one-tenth of the speed of light, it's like 98 Hiroshima atomic bombs, you know, impacting your spacecraft. And, you know, science fiction has, you know, deflector arrays and shields, but then you're just adding, you know, to the already insurmountable energy problems. And simply, traveling faster than the speed of light in our time-space universe is impossible. Einstein theorized that the maximum speed limit was the speed of light. We've got a lot of experimental, real, testable scientific evidence to suggest that that's correct. So, where are they coming from? We are seeing things. We see them on radar. Credible witnesses have seen them. And so the most popular view, yes, is what's called the interdimensional hypothesis. And this is a view that they are coming from another dimension or realm. And, you know, I think a good example here is someone like John Mack. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, Dave, or your listeners, but John Mack was he was raised as a materialist. He says he was raised in a kind of a skeptical, you know, rationalist home.
I'll tell you, can we cover John Mack in a minute? I just want to talk to you about a few things real quickly that we just mentioned. And I have no science background whatsoever. I'm a radio show host, and that's about as far as my intelligence quotient allows me to go. But are you familiar with the work of John Searle?
No.
All right. Here's somebody, and I'd recommend you guys look into this and explore it further. Remarkable and interesting man who created flying craft that would, and again, I'm generalizing this and dumbing it down as much as I can possibly understand it, that he was able to fly this using radio control at breakneck speeds that were unbelievable. And the reason why was it was kind of working like a deflector ray. It was opening up kind of a pocket of, if I understand correctly, kind of opening up a magnetic pocket in front of the craft, which meant that there was no resistance, there was nothing. So it was able to move at a much more rapid speed. And he did these experiments in front of camera crews, news crews. They saw all kinds of remarkable work that he was doing. So I was just curious if you guys were familiar with that work and where you weighed in on that. Perhaps we can revisit that in the future. I can connect you with John and the people that work with John Searle. I think you would find some of that research eye-opening if it is, in fact, legitimate work and research, and that you have these scientists at your kind of beck and call with your organization. It might be worth researching. Mm. The other thing was talking about the speed of light. Okay, as we currently understand the speed of light, we can, through fiber optics, we can transfer data at the speed of light, right? We can transfer information in blinks and instants. So couldn't we, theoretically, hypothetically, if we could open up a shaft of light as it's traveling, if we can utilize that same stream that light broadcasts through, and there were an advanced civilization, because again, we didn't think traveling at the speed of sound was even possible, and we've broken that barrier. Now I understand speed of light is even faster than that, but I'm just saying, I would think that, you know, the probability or possibility is that at some point we could, almost in a Star Trekian way, use the beam in order to transport through vehicles, craft, things like that, where something that we're not even conceiving as a possibility at this point. But if if light is an energy, well, we know it's an energy. If it's an energy and an energy beam, you would think that you could use that to telegraph information, whether it's of an energy form of a machine, maybe utilizing it like John Searle, using the light beam to kind of open the pocket of resistance in front of it to allow a craft to move through it. I'm just curious, you know, I mean, what do we really know about the speed of light and what that energy means and how it can or cannot be utilized? If we can transport that kind of data.
We've got over 100 years investigating the speed of light and what light is. And here's the issue. You know, you're only talking about photons. And those photons have to move through a medium, which is space.
Right.
You know, Einstein called it the ether. So it's okay to say, well, you know, could we accelerate something with mass to the speed of light? But we always have to. We can't resort to unknowns to explain, you know, what might be or what is possible. We have to deal with science fact and what we know. And we actually do know enough now. Now, getting energy sources that can accelerate a craft to the speed of light, you know, might be entirely possible. But, you know, if you, you know, as I said, if you wanted to accelerate something, you know, the size of a softball, you know, to half the speed of light, you're talking about a hundred Hiroshima-sized atomic bombs. Now, that's for something of that mass. Now, when you get going at that speed, and you're in space, in the vacuum of space, you'll keep going at that speed, but then you've got to use the same energy requirements to slow you down. And the problem there, you know, when Captain Kirk, you know, drops out of warp drive and almost to a stop in an instant, we've actually got articles on our website at creation.com that show you, for human beings, for example, you'd be taking hundreds of years of slow acceleration to get up to speed and slow deceleration, at the other end. So it's not just about developing, you know, even energy requirements, which, again, I think would just be impossible, you know, unless, as you say, you discover some sort of, you know, unknown force. But there are other issues, G-forces, as I said, acceleration, the dust problems in space. And you mentioned about creating gravitational fields in front of the craft and behind the craft. That's actually the concept of warp drive. And in my book, Alien Intrusion, I actually covered that. There's a scientist by the name of Miguel Alcubierre who was experimenting on actually contracting space in front of the craft. And then what you do is you expand space out the back of the craft to create literally a warp bubble. But again, the analogy there is you are still traveling through a medium. The analogy would be, you know, I come from Australia, so you know, I'm used to doing a lot of surfing. So if I imagine if I'm in the medium that is the sea, the water, if I dive underneath the water and I swim in it, I'm going to get a lot of resistance. I'm going to have to try to swim through that medium. So let's try to actually move the medium itself. You catch a wave, and now I'm on the surface of that wave, and I'm, you know, traveling along much faster than I could have in it. So these are, you know, all concepts that people can come up with and dream with. But as I say, I don't think it's a matter of advanced technology. You've still got to overcome these incredible physical constraints. And I know it kind of makes me sound like a naysayer. Hey, I love science fiction as much as the next man. I mean, I've seen every episode of Star Trek, you know, and Star Wars. But, you know, sci-fi and futuristic ideas are great because they make us think about what's possible in the future. You know, Arthur C. Clarke came up with the idea of satellites in space, and now we're using them. H.G. Wells. You know, he was one of the first guys to think about lasers. We do that. But none of those things kind of would have to defy, you know, the laws of physics. And we can only presume that the same laws of physics that we see in our own neighborhood of space here literally apply elsewhere out there. And the biggest single fact, the pain in the neck, of course, to sci-fi, you know, is the travel distance problem. And one of the things we do know, this is experimental science, is something known as time dilation. You know, when you and I sit here on the Earth now and we look at our clocks, because we're closer to the source of Earth's gravity, compared to the clocks that are now running up on the International Space Station, they run faster. So time itself is actually not a constant. It depends upon you as the observer, and gravity affects time. In fact, our GPS satellites and our sat-navs in our car actually have to correct for the fractions of a second difference in time dilation in receiving those signals. And I think one of the best movies, it sounds confusing, but one of the best movies I ever saw that covered that was Interstellar. You remember they're on the space station near the right. Near the wormhole. And they left and they went down to a planet, and it was like they were there for a few hours. And when they came back, that guy had aged, I think it was like 20 years or something. And I was kind of, you know, almost cheering in my seat because it was like it was the first science fiction movie that ever really captured the reality of what we know, if people could travel faster than the speed of light or go through wormholes. So, you know, when Star Trek Enterprise travels off to Vulcan and they're back, you know, and they say, oh, it'll take us 3 days to get there, and they're traveling at multiple factors of light, warp speed. By the time they get back, the people on Earth would have aged by years. And, of course, you never see that in science fiction because you wouldn't have a science fiction program. So that's just another issue that's really insurmountable. And that's why the interdimensional hypothesis, I think, is the most popular, because it kind of solves all those problems that these entities, whatever they are visiting us from, you know, another realm or dimension that might be in parallel to our own.
All right. Now, can I ask you this?
Technology, otherwise they're obviously able to get here, but we can't go there. That's the problem.
Isn't it funny, and just stick with me on this question for a second, isn't it funny that the idea that we could travel at light speed or multiple times light speed in order to traverse the galaxy, the universe, and move around as aliens appear to do, just doesn't abide by the law of physics? But the probability that it's from a parallel or alternate dimension does make sense. That means that we believe that theoretically they can open up portals between one universe or one plane of existence into another. What is there in science that backs that theory up, that that is a probability? And what is the probability that that's more accessible than the traveling at speed of light?
Well, again, you've got to look at the actual evidence itself. Mm-hmm. As I said earlier, we never see them traveling here from outside. Whenever they appear here. And the very fact that you see them accelerate down and do U-turn without slowing down, any physical beings would be smashed in that process. And so that's why I was going to mention John Mack, because, as I say, he started out a skeptic, but after, you know, he was going to investigate the abduction phenomenon so that he could, you know, do a clinical study, thinking all of these people were, you know, psychologically deluded or whatever. But he ended up becoming a believer. And even he, even though he comes from a skeptical rationalist background, you know, we actually have a quote from him in the movie, and I think he nails it. He says, "These are spirit beings who sort of stayed in the spirit realm, who have somehow crossed over into our realm." And he kind of uses the words that they're conducting an intervention. And see, one of the key issues here, Dave, is even though we can talk about the facts of science and what the evidence presents, the reality is we all approach data, we always approach the facts with our worldview is already in place. You know, I'm a Christian, so I have, if you like, a spiritual view of the universe. And I believe that what I see actually fits with that. Someone who's, you know, doesn't have the same worldview as me would say, what I'm seeing is interdimensional. And, you know, there is a realm that we don't know, we can't see. They'll call it interdimensional. You know, Hynek and Vallée called it paranormal or paraphysical. I would use the same words as spiritual to describe what I'm seeing. So I think we're aligned in terms of observing the evidence and what we see. As I said, we think that the origin of where they're coming from, what's behind it, might be slightly different. But and we do that really, I believe, based upon our worldviews, how we already have kind of had a conclusion in some respects before we ever approach the evidence. And, you know, ufology is rife with that.
All right, now I'm a little confused on this. So you're saying that John Mack believes these are spiritual beings that have perhaps once lived here, passed over, and have found a way back to us?
No, not once lived here. He would believe that it's a dimension that's somehow parallel to ourselves.
Okay.
And he was such a believer in it that he believed that they could give us some sort of, you know, spiritual enlightenment and so on. And you would obviously be aware that the UFO movement has many threads. You know, there are New Age writers who believe that, you know, they've been visiting us and maybe overseeing our evolution for years, and that they're going to take the Earth into some, you know, nirvanic or utopian state in the future. So, you know, there's never ever one, you know, defining view on how people approach the subject matter. But the reason he came up with the idea of calling them spiritual beings was because of what the evidence suggested. You know, people were claiming they were being abducted, and they said they were passing through the walls and the ceilings. You know, they're taken on board a ship and they're taken off to, you know, different parts of the galaxy. And then returned home, you know, within a few hours. These types of things, and these are the experiences that people remember, usually under hypnotic regression. But he just, one of the things that made a believer about him was the commonality, actually, of the experiences, which is why I said something, you know, I would agree, something actually is happening to these people.
I want to ask Gary again, kind of coming back to you real quickly, where did your real interest in this come in? Did you have a belief? I know you loved sci-fi as I did growing up. We seemed to watch the same shows and follow in those same circles. But at what point did you take it beyond a fascination with sci-fi into the realm of examining and researching the possibilities that this may actually be going on right now?
Well, as I said, it was actually when I entered full-time ministry. And I realized that, there was an evolutionary connection. The two most popular views about how the world, the universe came to be is, either evolved or we were created. So that's kind of what our ministry explores. But, I started, as I said, reading the literature. And then, like the others who've investigated, I've just kind of followed in the footsteps. You really get confronted by the evidence. I started to attend UFO conferences, and I'm sitting in my chair listening, and some guy sitting down the front starts to claim he's channeling a message from an alien being. I'd listened to the stories of investigators, and many of those people have become my friends. And then, of course, what happened is that, the book came out in 2005, and if you don't mind me giving that a plug, it's available on Amazon.com, Alien Intrusion. It's still, after 12 years, ranked in the top 50 of UFO books. In fact, it was an Amazon top 50 bestseller in the year it came out.
And we've got a link just for our listeners know. If you go directly to darknessradio.com and click on our Killer Deals link, you're going to find the book there listed in our Killer Deals page. We've got all of the books you hear from our authors all listed right there on the Amazon page, so it's easy to find, very easy and accessible. So if you forget what the titles of the book are, you can always just visit darknessradio.com and click on that Killer Deals link to find all of that information. And we will have that book up there available for people as well.
That's great. Fantastic. So, and the reason I mentioned that is once the book came out, I started to get contacted by people. And, I've lectured on this, and it's no exaggeration to say literally hundreds of times now, even in churches, public meetings, wherever people will listen. And, you can usually kind of pick the experiences. I might be in a church or something, and the church is advertised, this evening, Gary Bates, UFOs, Aliens, and the Bible. And people think, what's going on there? But I'll come in and I'll give the talk, and I can see from the front, there might be a guy or someone sitting on his own in the corner listening. And, to be honest, the typical Christian response to this might be, oh, well, it's all demonic, or you're all having a psychological delusion or something. Now, that might be the case in a number of cases, but you've got to be careful of just applying a broad brush to it. You've got to look at every case individually. You've got to examine it at face value. And what I found is quite interesting is that often these people will come up to me. They're telling me that when I describe the experiences that people have, that was them. Yep, that was me. What you described, that happened to me. And so when I said at the beginning, my aim is to try to help people because these experiences are traumatic. We have this, glorified idea that these are advanced aliens and they're coming to oversee our evolution. And you've got to then say, well, why do they stealthily abduct people in the middle of the night? Why don't they use a tricorder on the victims like, Dr. McCoy? Why do they need to anally probe people and they wake up in fear and dread? And the majority of the experiences we find suffer post-traumatic stress syndrome, the same as battlefield veterans. Richard McAnally, another Harvard psychologist who's a skeptic and does not believe these are spirit beings or aliens at all, but he said that these people are traumatized by the experience that they believe that they've had. And so when they hear me talk about it, I think it kind of creates a bond of empathy, because they're used to being dismissed, turned away, shunned. They find they have problems at work, and often the only people they've told are their closest family. So that's what I mean when I say I've got more than I bargained for, because they come up and they tell you their stories. And I often warn people, you think you have the answer, and it's going to be very, very easy to say, I know what happened to you. Be quiet. Let me explain what happened to you. But people want to tell their stories. They want to explain to you what's happening, and a sympathetic ear goes a long, long way in this regard.
All right.
Then you can try to help them define the experience for themselves.
I want to talk when we come back what your thoughts are on, it's one thing to say that people are seeing things in the sky and that we're witnessing unidentified flying craft and craft that are moving at breakneck speeds and doing remarkable stunts. But what about the claims that people are interacting with these alien species and abductions? What does religion think of this from your aspect? What do you believe is going on? We'll find out more about that when we return. Stay tuned. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
Alien Intrusion. Gary Bates is our guest. He's the author of the book Alien Intrusion, UFOs, and the Evolution Connection. He is also part of a documentary that will be coming out and will be on, 700 screens nationwide on January 11th. We'll have information and his website up on our site so you can find it and all the information there right here on today's podcast. So it's all available for you. Check it out right now. Before the break, Gary, I was asking about communication with these beings, with these alien creatures. And I'm fascinated by the religious aspect of this and how you guys are looking at this. Because, as you said, most churches will just say, this is the demonic realm. This is evil. This is something we shouldn't be looking into, researching, or giving any time or effort towards. But you guys are very open to this, and this is something that's an actual research point for you. I know that the Vatican also researches this and possibilities, and it was just, I think within the last 10 years, the Pope came out and said, hey, it's okay to have faith that there is life on other planets, that God created more than just us. So that was kind of a big evolutionary step in the religious movement of belief for this, for the idea of aliens or otherworldly species. But what do you think about these abduction scenarios and communication with aliens? If we remove the element of insanity from whatever portion of the populace that claims to have it, and we're left with the ones that are very credible, where do you go with that?
Sure. Well, let me refer to John Mack because, I can use him as a hostile witness, if you like, because he doesn't come at it from a Christian perspective. But as I said, our views are aligned. In the movie, he's interviewed. In fact, there was an interview he did on Oprah. And he said, look, I can tell you as a psychiatrist, the stories that people have, the symptoms that they have, he said, fantasy is not like that. Delusion is not like that. The only thing that presents itself is real experience. And again, Hopkins, in fact, in the movie, we interviewed Nick Redfern. You may have heard of him. He's kind of,
Nick's right a friend of our show.
Yeah, so we interviewed Nick. Got to know him quite well. I mean, he's the one also. He's written over 40 books on this. He'll say his views have changed over the years. He started off, they're coming from far, far away, hyperdrive spaceships abducting people. And then he said his views changed over the years based upon the evidence. And his views align with someone more like John Keel, that they're interdimensional. But here's what Mack, Hopkins, all will tell you, is that the entities act deceptively. They almost overplay their hand to appear alien in nature. He said, in the old days, they came, and this was something I discovered and, thinking independently, but of course he's realized the same things. He said, 30 years ago, they were coming from, Venus and Saturn, and we've been to those places, and we know they're not habitable. Now they come from, distant star systems, of course, where we can't test their claims. And he says the goalposts are always shifting. So how does that align with my Christian view or a Christian view? Well, a lot of people, in the same way that Christians might parody the UFO phenomenon, many people parody the Christian worldview about what the Bible says or what we believe about the spiritual realm. I think what we are dealing with is what the Bible would call deceptive spirits, okay? Now, you can use the word demons or fallen angels or whatever you like, but even those terms, immediately you hear them, they convey a cultural idea of spirit beings with fairy wings or something like that. Never once does the Bible ever record them like that. when they appeared in the Bible, they appeared physically. You know, they sat down and they ate food. You know, even Jesus claimed to be resurrected from the dead, and one of the disciples, Thomas, said, put your hand here, put your finger here. And then that same Jesus, who was physical, appeared. It didn't say he walks through walls, which is an urban legend, but it says he appeared in the room with his disciples. So he could phase in and out of our reality. These spiritual entities, angels, demons, whatever you want to call them, morph in and out of our reality, both good ones and bad ones. And the Bible is clear that if I call it an interdimensional war has been going on. And the Bible also records, particularly in the Old Testament, where deceptive spirits came along. You know, people worshipped them. You know, people threw their children into the belly of the bronze gods. And one of the things I've become a bit of a student of in recent years is Egyptian culture. You know, and the Egyptians had a multitude of gods. And again, we look at that as if it's some primitive idea, but it's quite clear that when you read the literature, they really believed something tangible was happening and appearing. And here's, you know, the problem I say when looking at this is, again, dealing with the spiritual realm, it's very, very hard to test. You and I can't go there. But there's an interesting passage, of course. Jesus says in his trial before Pilate, he says, you know, my kingdom is not of this world. My kingdom is from another place. Another example is when you have Moses and Aaron standing in Pharaoh's court. And it says there that Aaron throws down his staff and it becomes a snake. So not wanting to go into another subject, but you know, if you believe that God is outside of our time and space and he's some sort of supernatural creator, he obviously can. He's not bound by the laws of physics that govern our universe because he doesn't exist in it. And miracles, for example, might be an addition to our natural laws. And obviously, it's possible that angels can also manipulate our natural realm to create and do the things that we're seeing. And the reason I say that is it says in the Bible that the conjurers, Pharaoh's magicians, threw down their staff or their stick and it became a snake. And even when I ask Christians, I say, well, what do you think that was? And they say, oh, it's an illusion. But then the Bible records that Aaron's snake ate the other snake. So it didn't eat an illusion. Somehow they were able to manipulate matter itself and turn it into a snake. You know, there's no indication of a sleight of hand or anything. So I think we see the glass very, very darkly when it comes to the spiritual realm. And one of the problems, and what I've been alluding there, whether it's the Egyptians in ancient times, you know, the Canaanites, and people have had experiences throughout the ages, fairies, elves, the little people, is when something stands in the bottom of your room in the middle of the night, that's a life-changing experience for somebody. You know, it really happened. And when that being says to you, hey, I've chosen you, you're special, and, you know, I want you to be a disciple, you know, both Mac and McNally and these people say that, and Redfern the same says in the movie, he said people's worldviews get transformed by the experience. But the problem is, and one of the reasons we call the movie, the subtitle is Unmasking a Deception, when we actually look at the stories that these people have been told, Norio Hayakawa, former member of APRO, and UFO investigations for over 40 years, he says that they're not telling us the truth. They're hiding their real intent. And so when all the experts say this, you've got to view the nature of the experience with some suspicion. The experience can be real, but why do they hide? Why do they lie about their true intent? And as I said, we've had these deceptive experiences for as long as we've got writings about, you know, beings appearing and disappearing in our realm.
you know, this, the whole process of this, knowing that there's something going on, that, you know, scholars and, you know, homebodies alike have this belief that we are being visited from where we're not sure, but that this is going on. That's a pretty remarkable thing. Why do you think at this point in our history, governments and religions aren't more willing to be open about the information and dialogue regarding what it is that we're truly coming into contact with?
Yeah. Well, I am not of the view, again, I, you know, coming from a scientific organization, I suppose we tend to try to approach the evidence based on what we see. You know, I think it's possible we will reach a time when the government will turn around and, I believe mistakenly, say, you know, we are being visited by aliens, because there's absolutely no question, and Redfern mentions this in the documentary, that the government researchers even believed that they were dealing with something in their, and this is the terms they used, by the way, that was possibly demonic. The way that it was, there was a guy named Ray Beauchet. Nick actually devoted half a book to this guy. He was a MUFON investigator, but he also had a unique position of being a Catholic priest, and the government went to him based upon, you know, the information they were getting from, you know, people with these incredible claims. And then, as I said, you've got UFOs that literally defy the laws of physics and pass through the ground and so on and so forth. Now, if you don't come, if you do not, say, have a Christian worldview, which allows me or already gives me a possibility or a plausible explanation to, you know, what we're seeing. In fact, it's acting more supernatural and spiritual in nature. But if you don't have that, in short, what else, if the government doesn't acknowledge that type of realm openly, what else will they say it is? And, you know, they're probably going to say, well, we can't explain it. It might be an advanced technology, you know, from some sort of alien race or entity. They know it's not visiting here from a galaxy far, far away. So again, they would probably view the, take the interdimensional hypothesis. But in the US, there's a simple reason, very simple reason, why the government doesn't say anything. And I actually covered this in my book, and I've got some quotes from leading government personnel, is they're worried about causing panic. Now, contrast that with somebody like the Mexican government. Mexico is a UFO hotspot. And, you know, you can go on YouTube and see footage. They've shown these objects on radar. And they're very candid. They say, we don't know what it is. In fact, one of the biggest sightings in history is the 1998, I think it is. Forgive me if I got the date wrong. Mexican wave. Thousands of people saw these craft hovering in downtown Mexico City. There were videos taken of them. And, of course, when we see something as obvious as that, the people turn around and say, well, the government must know about it. Well, in the case of the Mexican government, they said, yeah, it was there, and we don't know what it is. But the U.S. government never, ever says that, because I think it's always about giving the impression that they want to appear in control, and there's nothing to worry about. And, of course, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, and I mentioned him and Valet, they were contemporaries. They kind of inspired Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Hynek makes a little cameo at the end of the movie. And we've got footage of him saying that, you know, when he was a researcher with Project Blue Book, he was the guy that came up with the swamp gas theory, you know, which has taken on a legend all of itself. He said there was no swamp gas. He said, I was instructed by the government at the time for the cases that we could not explain to come up with an alternative explanation, simply not to cause panic. But he ended up becoming very frustrated with that approach. He said there's something we need to investigate. And of course, when he left researching for the government, he started CUFOS, the Center for UFO Studies. He started his own research organization, and he and Valet became contemporaries. So I think that's, you know, my view tends to be a bit more simplistic than most. I don't believe they're hiding any alien technology. I just think that they just really don't know what they're looking at, and they don't want to mention it because you know, we have to be in control of these things. We can't make statements to the public and say we don't know what we're looking at.
What do you think, too, of the aspect, and I know this is, again, throwing it to the sci-fi realm, but what do you think of the aspect and belief that this is actually us from the future coming back to examine and witness historical events? I mean, we can't deny the amount of UFO activity that surrounds historic events just prior and right after these events take place. There's always sightings, and it's pretty interesting to me that, you know, is going on. Are they just alien visitors wanting to see and witness what just occurred, or do you believe that we may be trying to get history right and coming back to examine it?
Well, if that is the case, one is, why would they be acting deceptively? You've got to look at, again, the nature of the experience, and it doesn't fit with the eye view, with the view that they're either highly evolved, technologically advanced aliens or humans. You've got to look at how they've appeared. As I said, we mentioned that they've been, fairies, elves, little people, third world cultures have their own stories of different beings appearing. And the reason is, you see, this is what Redfern and others found, is it morphs itself to the understanding of the culture of the day. Today it's glorious spacemen because that's what we believe in. But just imagine 150 years ago somebody seeing some lights in the sky and they don't know what they're looking at. They've never thought about space vehicles. We're not in the age of sci-fi. So they might say, well, it's an angel or a demon or maybe I need to go and get my eyes tested or something. So, I kind of wrote in my book, perhaps they don't say please on Pleiades, but that's not an excuse. If they're from the future or these beings have been overseeing our evolution and watching us for centuries, don't they know the deleterious effects of stealthily abducting people in the middle of the night and subjecting them to all sorts of gross medical experiments that kind of defy, the idea that they're technologically advanced? And then you've got the fact that they've changed their shape. In fact, what is the most common view of people seeing an alien today is the grey. But actually, a lot of people don't know is that just prior, in fact, to the advent of Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind, we didn't see them as, greys or round-headed creatures with insect-like eyes. We had all sorts of other depictions of them. And now you've got a myriad. You've got greys, reptilians, insectoids, and all sorts of creatures. And then the issue is the stories that they tell us. Why? Which is noted by Redford and Hopkin and Keel and just anybody who's researches. Why do they purposely deceive their contacts? Why do they claim that they're from the Pleiades and they were humankind's creators, millions of years ago, and then somebody over here says, no, we're from the Pleiades, or Zeta Reticuli, or Sirius? They can't all be right. And then, as I said, they've lied about where they come from. We've been able to test their claims as well. So, if we're coming from the future, then I don't see why they would be acting deceptively and harming and treating their own species in such a brutal, dishonest way that they're doing today.
Well, the aspect of why would they be deceptive if they're trying to keep the idea that time travel exists from our current timeline, I could understand the deception in that point, because as you and I can both agree, and not even just from what we've learned in science fiction, but the idea if time travel truly exists and that is a probability, then, there are going to be people that will try to manipulate it and use it for very destructive purposes.
Sure, I think there's but again, that doesn't deal with the aspect that they're not just keeping the truth from us. They're lying, and then accompanying the lie is that they're treating people really, really badly. That's the issue. Now, if they're that advanced, even today, through hypnosis, you can alter or change somebody's memory. You might remember Hopkins wrote Missing Time, the book Missing Time. That's the single biggest factor, is that people have the experience, they see a light, they look at the dashboard of the car, hours have gone, they wake up later, what happened? They go to a UFO research center, they're hypnotized to recall these alleged, repressed or hidden memories. So they have an opportunity right there, if they're coming and, basically hypnotizing people. So you know, don't consciously remember what happened to you, why are we getting the implantation of all of these brutal experiments when they have the opportunity to say, hey, it was really nice, it was beneficial, etc.
But Gary, we're,
you know, quite I simply, think if somebody lies to you, David, if somebody lies to you,
right,
they're a liar. That's it. You know,
sure.
Trust is not recommended.
Well, here's the thing, though, and I don't know how you feel on this, but in asking, I mean, and please don't take this wrong, you sound to me a little too utopian in that thought. You're giving humanity in the future a lot more credit than we would have now. Listen, we're a nasty little breed of individuals who test on our own people, test on animals. We do horrific things in the name of science constantly. What would make you think that in the future we would do anything less, especially if we're trying to test humans today to see how they're evolving, what their medical conditions would be? Maybe the chips that people are being implanted with, or these medical examinations or probings, are actually to get an understanding on how to defeat a disease that may be in the future. You can't always make an omelet without cracking a few eggs. And I just, you know, I don't know if we're thinking, well, if we're that evolved that we can time travel, we're going to be past the idea of still human experimentation. But I don't think that necessarily goes hand in hand with the way we see the world.
Well, I suppose my utopian view probably aligns with Star Trek, doesn't it? You know,
yeah.
We're all living together in peace and harmony in the future. And I would think that, you know, as our technological advances go, you know, we are not treating each other worse. I mean, you'll always get sinful men or some autocratic ruler that wants to create genocide, but that's generally not the way the world is going. Yeah, we are trying to treat the human species and treat ailments that are under the human condition a little bit better. And as I say, that's what we kind of see in our future when we look at science fiction. The technological advances that we've made, particularly in the last 100 years, have led to increase in lifespans through sanitation, good medicines, good medical care when people have access to it. So, you know, we can, you know, and I don't mean this disrespectfully either, Dave, we can kind of explain away that bad behavior in the future. But again, it doesn't align with kind of the trend or the timeline that I'd say that we're looking at. But, you know, what you've hit one thing you've done is hit the nail on the head is how difficult all this is to really solve. And, you know, the modern UFO phenomenon, as I said, has been with us for, you know, some nearly 80 years now. And, you know, for every researcher that's out there, you'll get a different answer because it's just so difficult to solve. And that tells us one thing, that they're not revealing their true identity and their true, you know, reason, you know, for what they are, for what they're doing, what they're here for. And as I said, it's the same phenomenon that's been with us for centuries. The same records over centuries are that people's experiences are usually not benevolent, they're malevolent in the nature of them.
But talking about Alien Intrusion, the documentary, why come out with that now? Your book is over 10 years old now. Why the final move to move it to a documentary form and re-examine these claims?
Well, the book has been updated over the years. I think we're coming up to the 8th printing. It's been updated and expanded. And, you know, one of the problems with humankind is we tend to think we know everything there is to know. You know, I've been married coming up to 40 years. I think I had my wife and women worked out, you know, 50 years ago. And, you know, you would be well aware the longer you live, you find out the less you know. I liken that to the UFO movement because, you know, there are things that are coming up. The research has been updated. And as I said earlier, one of the things, in fact, if people read the book, I amended the foreword there because since the initial publication, I've had hundreds and hundreds of people contact me. And it's been an opportunity, if you like, to use it as kind of a test bed of research, to kind of test out my ideas and my hypothesis or hypotheses with these people, you know. And I have to say, for me personally, anything that's only confirmed in spades, you know, my view that we are dealing with spiritual entities visiting us, if you like, from another realm. And how weird it is. And this is one of the things, too, you know, rubbing shoulders with other UFO researchers. Again, in some respects, I feel like if they don't have the right worldview in place, it's very easy to get taken in by the strangeness of it all. If I share a little anecdote, I was in New Zealand some years ago, and I was lecturing in a church, and we were just walking out. It was late on a Saturday night. And I remembered seeing from the pulpit there, you know, as you do, you look at it on the audience, it was this lady, middle-aged lady with really white hair. And as the pastor was locking up the door and I was saying goodnight and my hosts were going to take me off for dinner, this car pulled up, you know, on the edge of the pavement. And I recognized the lady with the white hair, and it was a young man about my age. Tells you it was a few years ago. And she got out of the car, she goes, "There he is, quickly, there he is, you know, quickly, go and talk to him, go and talk to him." And I immediately knew what was about to happen. So I said to the, you know, "Look, guys, you better go. You know, I need to probably sit and talk to this guy." So we went to one side so he could talk to me privately, confidentially. And he started to tell me his story. And this is what happens. And I just listened, and he said when he was a boy, his family used to take him up to his uncle's farm in New Zealand, and he said it was a great place. He said, "I was a city kid. I could run around on the farm for hours. You know, when it got dark, I came home. It was totally safe." And he said, and then one day, he said, he saw the spaceship land. I said, "Really?" And he said, "Yep." He said, "It landed." And here was the clue. It was kind of saucer-shaped with a glass dome top. And he said that the kind of the ladder or the runway, the ramp, kind of extended out from the ship. And he said, and, you know, the alien walked down the ship. I said, "What did you do?" He said, "I just ran. I was terrified." And he ran back to a barn nearby. We'd call it a shed in Australia or New Zealand. And he said he kind of, you know, locked himself in there, and he could see the shadow of the being walking outside, and terrified it was going to come through the door. He said, "I pushed my back up against the door to stop him coming in." He could actually feel the force of the door being pushed. And he said he was just terrified. He ran to the back of the barn and tried to hide. And he said, and the door opened, and it was literally like a scene out of the movie. He said the sunlight shone through the fading light shone through the back of this alien through the doorway, and he was silhouetted. And it's rare that I do this, but I just said, "Can I just stop you there? Can I ask you a question?" And I said, "You know, was he wearing kind of either a one-piece silvery suit or a one-piece white suit? And was he kind of wearing like a glass helmet?" And the guy looked at me and he said, "How did you know that? How did you know that?" And I didn't tell him why I think I knew that, but I just said, "No, it was just a guess," and continue with the story. Now, the reason I guessed it, I thought to myself as he was telling me the story, he was about my age, and the sci-fi stories that I grew up with as a kid were, you know, Lost in Space, you know, Robbie the Robot. And, of course, you remember how in all those B-grade 1950s, early 1960s sci-fi movies and series, you know, AVS stood still. All the aliens were wearing a one-piece silvery or white jumpsuit, and their helmets were kind of fishbowls on top of that, and that was classically exactly how this entity appeared to him. So I picked from his age, being similar to me, the age that he said he was. I said, "Well, we're talking about probably, you know, mid-60s when he had this experience." I'd said, what did Hollywood portray them like? And bingo, that was exactly what this entity portrayed himself like to this young boy at the time. So that's what I mean by a testbed of experience. It's very, very interesting talking to people of different generations and seeing how this phenomenon morphs itself to their understanding.
What stories have really shaped you the most in this research or spurred you on to keep you going? Because I know this can be very unrewarding at times as a researcher and an investigator when we don't get concrete evidence, something that we can actually tactile, feel, sense, see, and prove exists. What keeps you motivated in this?
Well, I have to say, I mean, even within my own ministry, I'm pretty much the only guy that deals with this. And so my experience in going out and lecturing, you know, we talk about creation versus evolution, is quite different because I get a lot of requests to talk on this subject. One of the things is, almost like the experiences themselves, is you feel a little bit isolated because, you know, even the church sometimes finds it difficult to understand, and also the non-Christians, because there are plenty of people out there that will just poo-poo the idea. Because, you know, let's just take the skeptic, you know, what I mean by a skeptic, you know, the materialist skeptic. He believes that there's a big bang and evolution occurring all over the universe, but he says it is physically impossible for these aliens to get here. So everybody's experiences, everybody's exciting has to be either naturalistic, man-made phenomena, or, you know, when it comes to abductions, they're having a psychological delusion. And then there's the UFO believer. And, you know, I've seen these folks. They come to my lectures. They're sitting on the front seat. They're almost salivating, you know, waiting for me to confirm to them that these really are, you know, advanced, technologically advanced aliens flying millions of light years to get here. And then there's the Christians who would necessarily, you know, probably whitewash it and say, well, it's all demonic. And I kind of take a fourth view, which I think is you look at each experience on its merit. And you only go to the supernatural when the actual evidence demands it. And so when I go out and I say I'm kind of isolated, what keeps me going on, I honestly feel that for the first time, the answer that I've been working on and what's presented in the movie and the book, and it collates with the research of a gentleman who's become a very good friend called Joe Jordan, MUFON researcher. Again, he said, let's, instead of looking at who's being abducted, he said, are there any particular groups of people who seem to be exempt from it? He's now the national director for MUFON in South Korea. We traveled over there to interview him. He said the same thing. He said, we can offer hope for these people. We can offer some help because they've been traumatized, brutalized by their experience. And it's like they're so isolated, nobody really understands what's going on. They find it difficult to talk with somebody. And one of the problems, I will say, is with the UFO-believing community. This is the community that believes these are advanced extraterrestrials. When these victims go off to these groups for help, it drives them deeper into the phenomenon to the extent that the experience keep reoccurring and keep reoccurring. And why? Because they've been given over to it. A classic example of this was Whitley Strieber in his famous book, Communion. You know, initially he talked about being sodomized and traumatized and how painful it was. And then, you know, as the years went past, he started to talk in loving terms with these beings. You know, that's kind of similar to a medical phenomenon, which is highly debated, but it's called Stockholm Syndrome. It's, you know, where victims and abductees or people have been kidnapped. It's the isolation of the experience that sees them becoming more aligned with their captors. They lose their objectivity. They start to, you know, because of a lack of contact with the outside world, it's a form of brainwashing, which we can do if you don't give people all the information they need. You only give them one source of information. You'll start to believe what you're told. So that's the thing that keeps me going, is that I believe, it's my honest intent to try to help people, to try to put into some of these terrible experiences they're having that have just dramatically altered, changed, and in some cases just wrecked their lives.
It's fascinating research. Great stuff. It's going to be in theaters for one night. How can people see it? Is there a place to sign up? Is there a place to find which movie theaters around the United States or around the world will be carrying it?
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that. Absolutely. So they can go to alienintrusion.com. It's that simple. On the front page, there's a button that says find a cinema near you and purchase tickets. You just got to click on that. And you go to the Fathom Events website. That's the hoster of the movie, the distributor, fathomevents.com. And you can just punch in your zip code and find a cinema near you. You click on the ticket portal, and you can get your tickets. And because it's a one-night event, the experience of these types of things is often people turn up on the night and they're disappointed. So if they do want to go and see the movie, if they want another view of this, you know, mysterious phenomenon, and, you know, hopefully from, you know, with people have been listening, Dave, we try not to beat people over the head. We're just presenting another, we believe, credible alternative to, you know, what Hollywood portrays. Make sure that they pre-book. That's important. You can start booking those tickets right now. Type for Alien Intrusion on fathomevents.com or just go to alienintrusion.com and click the ticket button.
Well, we wish you a lot of success with that. And please keep us in mind as you get more updates, more stories. We'd love to hear back from you again.
Thank you so much, Dave. I appreciate the liberty and the time you gave me to explain it all today. Very much appreciated.
Always a pleasure. And thank you all for tuning in. Remember, if you want to give the best gift this holiday season, you can email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and you can order yourself Paranormal Challenge, the complete mini-series from Travel Channel that I was a part of as the lead judge. It's only $30 for the entire series. We also have copies of my book available for just $10. And you can email me at dave@darknessradio.com. Whether you want just the book, just the DVD, only $3.95 shipping and handling, email me now so that we can get them out to you before the holidays, autographed and in your hands for you or your special loved one when you're looking for that perfect paranormal gift for the holidays. That's it for today. Be kind, love one another, and we'll see you again here tomorrow on the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.